Well, good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And of course, Wednesday, we ordinarily have open lines for the first hour of our program. So if you have something you'd like to talk about, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And I thought I'd start off talking about an article I just read in the New York Times. Now, I read the New York Times because it is an excellent newspaper. It's very slanted. It's far to the left. Many of its articles are frank propaganda for the establishment. But you will occasionally hear something or read something in the newspaper that is well worthwhile, is quite accurate, because they can't have lies everything, and they do have some excellent investigative reporters. And there was an article here just in the last day or so about a disease called Kala Azar. It kills about 500,000 people a year. 500,000 people die every year of this, a disease that could have been treated since 1960. They had a very effective drug in 1960, and now, 46 years later, a couple has actually put their savings on the line, invested $100,000 of their own money, and mortgaged their house, and actually worked full-time, trying to get this drug certified that would save 500,000 lives a year for about $10 for each individual. And the World Health Organization has blocked them at every turn. The Internal Revenue Service blocked them at every turn. Apparently, to the credit of the Gates Foundation, they have come on board, and they're going to help them develop this medication that would save 500,000 lives every year. Kala Azar is the largest killer in the world, next to malaria, which kills about 3 million people a year. And AIDS is not very far behind that, but over the we've actually known about AIDS for, 26 years, and we've lost between 20 and 30 million people. So it's killing maybe 1.5 million people a year. So Kala Azar is probably the third largest killer in the world. It is treatable. It's been treatable for many years. And you have to ask yourself, why, you know, when we have all these people, smart people, in the World Health Organization that works very closely with the U.S. Public Health Service and other American organizations and foundations, why nothing has been done? And what you must understand is that the basis of American foreign policy is population control. And you can go back to 1974 with the issuance of something called the National Security Study Memorandum 200. That's NSSM 200. It's available on the Internet. Of course, you can get it from Radio Liberty. We offer them bound, but you can pull it down from the Internet and read it. It came over. It was initially top secret. It was kept secret for 20 years because it didn't want the American people to know that we had a program to reduce the populations in third world countries throughout the world. Why? Well, because actually, if these people in these third world countries were to industrialize, and of course, if you have a large population, you can industrialize, they'd begin to use their own natural resources, and we wouldn't be able to get them so cheaply. Now, that seems like a very crass statement, but that is the truth of the matter, because we're dealing with crass and indifferent people, and certainly one of the most crass and indifferent people I know is Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger, of course, has worked for the Rockefellers for almost 40 years now. And Henry Kissinger, of course, has done probably more harm than any other man that I personally know. And we're going to be back here in just a moment. We have Michael calling from Ireland. Give us a call here at Radio Liberty. Well, we have Michael calling from Ireland. Hi, Michael. How are you tonight?
Okay, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. Do you have a question or comment?
I have many questions, but I thought one particular acid reflux, what's the best thing to deal with? You know, you have excess acid, the doctors suggest Nexium or Prilosec, something like that. What do you think about them, and what do you think about the best way to deal with it?
Well, now, remember, I am an orthopedic surgeon, so this is out of my field. I will tell you that some of my friends who deal with this sort of thing say that many times people actually do not have enough acid, and that's why they get the acid reflux. But I know when my wife tried taking the acid, well, it really didn't help her at all. You're going to have to talk to somebody who's a lot smarter than I am. Certainly the Nexium, the Zantac, these other things will give you temporary relief, but they don't get to the basic cause of it. So you're probably better to talk to a real expert. I don't know if Dr. Blaylock has a section on that in his book, Health and Nutrition Secrets, but maybe next time we get Dr. Blaylock on, where you can ask the question.
Okay.
So that is not something that I feel very comfortable answering. And I would have rather be like the unidentifiable source who declined to be quoted but said off the record that he had no comment. So go ahead, Michael. Do you have anything else you'd like to ask?
Is it strictly dealing with the health, your health, or anything?
Oh, well, you can ask anything you want to, because this is an open line program for the first hour, and you know we'll talk about whatever you would like to talk about. No, actually, I was simply talking about this disease, Kala-Azar, kills 500,000 people a year, and I dare say that most of our listeners have never heard of it, because there's been an organized effort for almost 46 years not to address this. In a word, for a fact that there's a couple that really are dedicated to trying to save lives, in contrast to the official policy of the United States government, which is to control the population and reduce the population of the world, why nothing could be done. But apparently now they may very well have something that will treat this, but the problem is that will just increase the population load in India and throughout the world. And yet, of course, this is what we should be concerned about. Rather than worrying about overpopulation, we ought to realize that every individual is a unique person made in the image and likeness of God. So, did you have something else you'd like to talk about?
Somebody mentioned Rumsfeld disease. What is that? I mean, indicated that aspartame could cause that. I heard you talk about aspartame a few years ago, and I had taken it, and I severely stopped, you know, and
hold on, stop right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is, don't have a guest, it's open lines, but we have Michael calling us from Ireland, and he was simply asking about something called Rumsfeld's disease. It's not really Rumsfeld's disease, it's simply that Donald Rumsfeld was the president of Cyril, and when the Reagan administration came into office in 1981, he was on the transition team, and he used every trick in the game to actually get his person in, the head of the Federal Drug Administration. And of course, the Federal Drug Administration had known for at least 15 years that aspartame was not safe to be given to human beings. Why? Because it produces epilepsy, seizures, it produces brain tumors in animals, and of course you're not supposed to put anything into food or drugs that actually produces tumors in animals, and yet this was a very consistent finding. It produces pathological obesity in animals, and this is one reason I think why we have so much pathological obesity in America today, is because of aspartame. They know that the scientific studies are there. And certainly anybody can go to Betty Martini's website, and she'll link to all the other websites that have the extensive studies there. There was a doctor only who, back in the 1960s, fed aspartame to animals, and whether it be rats or mice or whatever it was, and got the brain tumors and the pathological obesity. It interferes with the endocrine system. It interferes with the intelligence. It interferes with the fertility. Aspartame is a terrible, terrible product. And yet, of course, Donald Rumsfeld got it onto the market. Of course, it was a very, very clever trick what they did. They had some studies on cats. Cats that had a tendency to develop bladder cancer. And if you fed cats with a tendency to develop bladder cancer, massive doses of saccharin, why you would get them to develop bladder cancer rather consistently. So they gave them 6,000 times the ordinary dose of saccharin, and sure enough, the cats got bladder cancer, and so they outlawed saccharin for a while, and that's how they got aspartame, or so-called NutraSweet, introduced on the market. And I dare say he's killed millions of people because of that. I do not have a great deal of respect for Donald Rumsfeld, but I'll tell you, he's sure a shrewd businessman. He made a lot of money as president of Serum, and then he went to work for another company that developed this Tamiflu. And, of course, Tamiflu is what they're... We're spending billions of dollars now stockpiling Tamiflu in case we have an avian flu epidemic. Well, let me tell you about the avian flu. It's been around since 1959 in birds. And I think a total maybe 130, 140 people have died in the last 3 years. This is a non-issue and non-problem. In fact, the CDC recently has been doing experiments trying to cross the H5N1 influenza virus, which is the avian flu virus, with the kind that's very, very lethal, pardon me, very easily spread among human beings. I think it's H3N1, something like that, or H3N2. And they couldn't do it. They could not get it to cross so that they would actually make this readily transmissible from human to human. But because of a coordinated effort on the part of the mass media, they convinced the American people and Congress, and Congress appropriated, you know, billions of dollars to fight avian flu, which is a non-issue. Donald Rumsfeld is a very shrewd businessman. Any other questions, Michael?
I guess I really have three scores of questions, if I can think of it. And at the moment, what's this I've heard about possibly a fear of some epidemic like bird flu or what have you being an excuse for herding people together in sort of concentration camps where they would infect each other with all sorts of other diseases? Is there any truth to that?
I think that the government has given Halliburton, which is Dick Cheney's old company, and Dick Cheney and George Rumsfeld have been friends for many years, having served together on several occasions in government. But suddenly the government has given Halliburton a contract for $380 million to develop a concentration camps, or they call them detention camps here in America. Now, where is the outcry from the American people about that? Well, they would need detention camps if they have civil unrest, or maybe they could put immigrants into them if they're ever going to round them up or something, and I don't think that's what they're there for at all. I think it is, of course, they are expecting civilian unrest when they declare a dictatorship. There really are people who want a dictatorship here in America. There have always been people who lusted after power, and I think that you cannot ever change the basic tendency of man. Man is basically evil, which is why our founding fathers here in the United States wanted to limit the power of government. Because they basically said that since you cannot really trust men with power, you have to limit the power of government. It's not men who exploit other men or destroy other men. Certainly you're going to have competition and you'll have injustice when you have a free society, but the one thing you want to do is limit the power of government, because government is the thing that ordinarily takes away people's freedom, not other men. Limit the power of the central government and let people work out the problems at the state and at the local level. And yes, sometimes you will have injustice there. But if you have injustice there, you can pick up and move, you know, to another part of the country, to another county, to another state. But what do you do when you have injustice at the national level? There's nothing you can do. No. My concern is that they would use the threat of influenza, of avian influenza, to force people to take vaccinations. And legislation was passed immediately after 9/11 to allow them to forcibly vaccinate people, to seize people's homes, to seize people's cars, to seize people's food supplies and really everything that they have. And it was the Emergency Medical Planning Act, it was called MEPA. We have written an article on that. You'll find that up on my webpage shortly after 9/11. And certainly they had at least, it would be left up to the states whether it would be compulsory vaccination or not. I will tell you quite honestly, I will not take any of their vaccines. I will not, because they have repeatedly in the past put lethal things into the vaccines and or things that would, for instance, cause women to have miscarriages. They did that with the tetanus vaccine that was given in Kenya, tetanus vaccine that was given in the Philippines here about a decade ago, and I've talked to doctors from both areas who've confirmed that fact. Of course, they can't ever admit this sort of thing, although I did talk to one of the leading vaccinologists on my radio program, and we were doing fine until I asked him about that program, and immediately hung up on me. In other words, he didn't want to have to talk to anybody about this, because the elite understand what's going on. Certainly, there's a wonderful book. It's called Rainbow Six. Have you ever read that, Michael?
No, I haven't.
It's written by Tom Clancy, and if you have a chance to get it and read it, it's the story of basically Tom Clancy in the foreword of the book says there's a lot of truth in this book that the government doesn't want you to know. Now, it's a book of fiction. It's about a group of people who are dedicated to sustainable development and population control. And they have a plan to create an epidemic. It will be a severe epidemic, and people will be dying. And they will come up with a vaccine. It's really the vaccine that's going to kill off the people. And they intend to kill off, 95% of the world's population. They themselves, of course, will have the proper vaccine. But the other vaccine is going to produce disease in people. Well, we know, for instance, they put a cancer virus in the original polio vaccine. Was it done accidentally, or was it done intentionally? That was SV40. And for the skeptic out there, there's a wonderful book. It was written by Dr. Edward Shorter at the behest of the National Institute of Health. The book is called The Health Century. That's The Health Century by Dr. Edward Shorter. And there he tells the story of how Dr. Bernice Eddy had been asked to test the initial Cutter vaccine and all the other vaccines. They were the salk vaccine, polio vaccines that were going to be given in 1955, 1956, 1957, somewhere in there. And she was in charge of the laboratory that was to test the vaccine to make sure it was safe. Well, she found the Cutter vaccine was killing and paralyzing monkeys. So she reported it to her superiors, and they released it anyway. And about 200 people contracted the disease. I've forgotten how many people died, but it was quite a scandal. And so, and she was not, after having told them what was going to happen, instead of congratulating her for her fine work, she was demoted. She was sent to another laboratory, but she stuck into the laboratory where they were growing the virus that was going to be used in the Sabin vaccine and in the Salk vaccine as well. And she discovered that there was a cancer virus there. And eventually it was turned out to be something known as SV40. Simian virus 40 was the 40th one that they tested. And this actually produced mesotheliomas and other cancers in hamsters. So, when she reported this, she was told that keep her mouth shut and never to mention it. She went to an international meeting and revealed what she had found at that time, why they destroyed her career. She was never allowed to talk ever again to anybody about her findings. Eventually, one of the leading vaccinologists at Merck confirmed her view. And of course, they changed that. It was a virus was found only in the rhesus monkey, so they changed growing the vaccine from the rhesus monkey to the green monkey, and then they contaminated us with all the green monkey viruses. So we've contaminated the entire population with green monkey viruses, the SV40, which is a cancer virus. People are dying. There's more cancer now than ever before. And many of these specimens, when they're tested, the cancer specimens are found to be loaded with SV40, covered in a book called The Virus and the Vaccine. That's The Virus and the Vaccine, and if you need it, why, you give us a call. I don't know if they still have any in stock. Excellent background on how they put things in viruses, in vaccines, to kill people. Well, Michael, anyway, I am very, very concerned about this thought of compulsory vaccination because I don't trust them. And we could go down the list of things that they have put in these vaccines that are harmful. They put the thimerosal in the vaccines, knowing full well that it's related to the Alzheimer's disease in the elderly and to autism and autism spectrum diseases in children and in infants. There really are evil and wicked people out there. So I'm not going to take their vaccines. And I think it's about time that people needed to do the research and find out if what we're saying is correct. And that last interview we did with Dr. Blaylock, did you hear that earlier this week?
I think I did. I hear you very early in the morning. I can't always get up in time, you know.
Do you have access to a computer?
No, I don't. I have a block with that. I don't have access to that. But about the vaccines, do you think they're going to require that worldwide?
Well, I don't know. I hope they don't do it over in Ireland. And I hope that the American people, we can reach enough of them and get them to realize that there really are evil and wicked people who would put things in the vaccines to hurt children, to hurt the elderly, to produce cancer and mental problems. And certainly, people need to understand that the government knows, government officials know how dangerous thimerosal is. And yet, of course, they've insisted on leaving in the childhood vaccines until recently. I think they took it out of the childhood vaccines in the United States in 1999, and all of the childhood vaccines have little or no thimerosal. But we're putting it in the childhood vaccines being given to children all throughout the world. Why are we giving it throughout the world to the children in third world countries? I thought we were there to help them. But we, of course, left it in the influenza vaccine, which is given to 6-month-old children. It's given to pregnant women, so it'll get through the mother's bloodstream and get into the brain of the developing fetus in her womb. And of course, it's given to the elderly, where it dramatically, 1,000% increase in Alzheimer's disease in elderly people who are foolish enough to take that. And if you look at the studies, really, the influenza vaccine really is not effective in preventing death at all.
Why would they want to increase Alzheimer's disease and autism? That would cause a burden to society.
You know, better way to destroy a great nation.
That's the reason.
There are wicked and evil people out there. When you understand that, everything begins to make sense, because if you're looking for a logical explanation, there isn't any. You're right. More and more people will be burdened. But you see, if you want to destroy a country, you burden it with all sorts of unproductive people. And, of course, you destroy the minds of the youth. You destroy their ability to have geniuses or superior intelligence among the youth. Then, of course, that nation soon has no foundation at all. It will not be producing any new geniuses who will come up with wonderful new treatments or wonderful new designs. America is under attack, and it's under attack because the wicked people have been placed into key positions in our nation. And as horrible as it is to contemplate that, I honestly believe this is what's going on.
Yeah, I believe it too. I mean, I mentioned to somebody the other day, a Christian, and some would-be Christians, and they just thought that sounded absolutely ridiculous. So it was science fiction. It was way out.
Well, of course it does, and so you don't tell them too much. Just tell them a little. Ask them some questions, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. This is Open Lines. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we've been talking to Michael, who's calling us from Ireland. And he was asking about vaccines, and I was just talking about some of the things they've put into vaccines intentionally, not accidentally, but intentionally to do harm. And we talked about the putting contraceptive material, chorionic gonadotropin, into the vaccines that were given free to women of childbearing age in the Philippines and in Kenya, probably in other countries. But I talked to doctors in both of those countries who confirmed that information to me. And then, of course, certainly putting the mercury into the vaccines when they knew, of course, how dangerous it was, and the simian virus 40 and the original polio vaccine. And Chris, the thing is that there are so many studies out now that show that the aluminum they put in the vaccines, which is an adjuvant, and that actually works to make the vaccine more effective, and the aluminum actually produces an inflammatory reaction in the brain, as well as the mercury and of course, the mercury and the fluoride, pardon me, the aluminum and the fluoride work together. And even if there isn't any mercury in the vaccines, simply the aluminum in the vaccine triggers off the immune system. Not only the immune system in the body, but the immune system in the brain, and produces an inflammatory reaction in the brain that can last for 6 months to a year, and by then it's time to get another shot. And we wonder why we're seeing so much more cancer in America, why we're seeing so much more youthful diabetes, in other words, type 1 diabetes, why we're seeing so much more allergic disease and autoimmune disease and asthma in our children, and the autism spectrum diseases. 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality. 1 in 6 American children, and those are the CDC's figures. Where is the outcry? And, of course, the organized medicine says we don't know what it is, but we can assure you it's not the vaccines because they're doing such a wonderful job of saving lives. And the truth of the matter is they're not doing such a wonderful job of saving lives. If you analyze the statistics on the influenza vaccine, there's no evidence that it helps pregnant women at all. There's no evidence that it helps the elderly. And, of course, figures don't lie, but liars figure. And, of course, they come up with these figures that 30,000 to 36,000 people die every year. But if you look at it, you know, in the small print, they're saying of influenza and pneumonia. Well, a lot of people are always dying of pneumonia, but they're not necessarily dying of the influenza. They may get a secondary pneumonia, but this is because they have a very poor immune system. Elderly people do, and things ought to be done to build up their immune system. But if you go up my internet site, or Michael, you could even drop us a note. We'd be glad to send you my newsletters. I wrote 2 newsletters on vaccines, and I simply took the statistics from the government's own statistics that showed that the incidence of death from diphtheria and tetanus and pertussis had fallen dramatically, and from polio had fallen dramatically before the vaccines were ever introduced, and would probably have continued falling. And we would have very little death if we didn't have the vaccines. But the question is, what about the risk-benefit ratio? And my fear is that the benefits are very small and the risks are tremendous. And 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental or behavioral abnormality directly related to brain injury. And we see, of course, the incidence of asthma, I think, is about 6 times, in the United States what it would be in many other nations. And I believe it's directly related to those vaccines. And they don't want to admit that because this is such a convenient means of getting things into people that are detrimental to their health. And when you understand that the major thrust of American foreign policy is population control, then things really begin to make sense. Well, anything else, Michael?
There's really tons of things. You mentioned on another program about a sleeping agent you could take that was safe. I can't remember the name, but what do you think about the temazepam? Is that bad?
I really don't know that. I really don't know that one. Hey, I'm going to have to run. We've got another caller here, but thank you so much for calling. And that was, of course, Michael calling from Ireland, of all places. And, of course, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And when we get back here in just a moment, we've got Jim, who's calling us from Missouri. And if you, this is Wednesday Open Lines. Now, we have a good program for the next hour, but we just thought we would try to do an open line here every Wednesday for the first hour. And if you like it, let us know. If you don't like it, let us know as well, because this is your program as much as mine. We do what we do because we want to get people educated. We want you to challenge what we say. Ask us, where can we verify what you're saying? Is it on your website? Are there articles? Are there books? Well, we'll try to give you answers to all those questions. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and right now, of course, we're going to go to Jim, who's calling us from Missouri. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Dr.
Stan? I'm doing just fine.
Can't listen to you tonight. My power's off, but I thought I would call in since it was the open time.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm glad to have you with us. Do you already listen on the Internet or shortwave?
Or Internet.
Is there a blackout in your area? Is the power down from overloading or what?
Actually, we're just having a storm tonight.
Okay.
We might get up to 2 inches of rain, which clearly we desperately need, so.
Okay, fine.
We're more than willing to have it.
Okay, fine. Well, do you have a question or comment?
Well, I had a couple things to run by you tonight and see what you thought. Right now, I'm reading this book by Jaina Davis called The Third Terrorist.
Right.
Have you read that?
Yes, I have.
What did you think of it?
I think it's an excellent book. I think that Jaina doesn't have the whole story, but I think the material she has better than anybody else does. And she really went out on a limb. She actually identified the terrorists. She got their names. She got sued for it. Went to court. And, of course, when she presented her evidence, the judge said, "You're right, you know. Obviously, this is the third terrorist or the second terrorist." And but then, of course, the American people never heard that. I think she's a very courageous lady.
Well, and coincidentally, as I was reading this on the History Channel today, they ran that conspiracy show about the Oklahoma City bombing and somehow managed to, I don't believe they mentioned her name in the whole thing, but...
She got the conspiracy of silence. Hired a lawyer, very well known in Washington, D.C., to try to get the members of Congress and others to acknowledge that the conspiracy, the bombing of the Oklahoma City building, involved a terrorist cell, an Islamic terrorist cell. Had that information come out, we might not have had 9/11. But the government has done everything to suppress information upon the Islamic terrorist cell that was involved with Timothy McVeigh there in Oklahoma City. Everything to suppress information about the downing of TWA, which obviously was brought down by missiles, because there were over, I think, 280 or 290 people who saw the missiles go up. And when they actually had the hearings, not one of those people was ever called. And they had somebody from the government who actually was there and testified what somebody else had said, and he lied about it. Everything was a lie. Everything was a cover-up. But because of the degree of control over the media, the average American has never heard of that. Part of the story is covered in a book called Into the Buzzsaw, written by a woman who used to work for CBS who tried to get the truth out and ended up never being able to get a job in the media again. And you hang on there for just a minute. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty with Jim, who's calling right now from stormy Missouri. Well, go ahead, Jim. So basically, I think that she did a great job on that. Now, she doesn't get into any of the other things. She doesn't get into the Elohim City connection, and obviously this was important. There were connections, of course, to what was going on over in the Philippines. But what they've done is they've created a whole flock of rabbit holes. And when you try to get into one rabbit hole, well, it leads you nowhere, and then you get to another rabbit hole. And obviously the government is covering up, at least certain people within the government are covering up the truth. Some FBI agents tried to get the truth out. They were blocked at every turn.
Well, I'm about halfway through the book, and one of the special agents from the FBI that clearly was stonewalling under orders was actually in this show today on the History Channel.
Sure. Well, you have to understand the History Channel usually puts things up there not to reveal but to conceal the truth. And
yeah.
Right now, of course, they're running this film over and over again on Masonry, which, of course, I think is put up to counter Chris Pinto's great film, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings.
It
cannot let the American people know the truth about the cult origin of many of the things in Washington, D.C., or the Masonic involvement in it. But remember, Masonry is only a modern-day manifestation of the ancient mystery religions. And there's probably not one in thousand of our listeners who has any idea what the ancient mystery religions were.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about is, have you had a chance to look at any of this information from the release of the military tapes from 9/11?
No, I haven't.
Oh, Alex played some of those on his show today. They were pretty interesting.
Well, Alex is doing a great job, and I don't know if you've seen the program. They've shown it either three or four times on C-SPAN,
mm-hmm.
and he is to be congratulated for that.
And that Stephen Jones is an amazing individual.
Yes, he really
is. The physics professor.
Is he physics or engineering professor?
I believe he's physics.
All right, fine.
Well, I think there's a lot of overlap there.
All right, for our listeners, Dr. Jones is a professor at the University of Utah. And, of course, he has actually analyzed the Twin Towers coming down. And he was able to get, actually, some of the metal that came from the from the debris, and he's found evidence of thermite there. Thermite is it's like thermite, but it's specifically used for cutting across the beams. There's no question in his mind that they use these special material to take down the beams. That's why the building came down as it did. And this obviously was a controlled explosion, according to him.
If anyone's interested, that's... Are you still there?
Yeah, we sure are.
I'm sorry, that was a big lightning thunder clap.
It's getting closer, huh?
It is. On cspan.org, if you click on American Perspectives, you can actually watch that program online.
Well, I think it's well worthwhile. I hope our listeners will do that after Radio Liberty is over tonight.
Well, this young lady, and this is something that came out. I've heard this on the History Channel and the National Geographic, where the first words out of the military's mouth on the morning of 9/11 was, is this real world or exercise?
And I think what the average American has never been told is there were a number of military exercises that morning. I've heard four, I've heard 15, but we know there were a number of military exercises that morning. And at least one of them, or several of them, simulated hijacking of planes, and one of them was supposed to, in theory, fly into the, I think the CIA headquarters. But the thing was, what they did is, and they would put these images up on the screen for the air traffic controllers, and one of them said, "Is this real, or is this part of the exercise?"
That was, this man that wrote the article, I'll just tell your listeners, the Vanity Fair article that Alex has linked, it's actually somewhat of a whitewash itself because he mentioned only one exercise going on.
Right.
When, as you said, there were quite a number.
Right.
But the amazing thing to me was when he verified that this was an actual hijacking, one of the ladies, this is an active duty military personnel working with him, said, "Cool." And when I read that, I just couldn't believe it. And I mean, this man just printed out what was on the you can go listen to the tapes at that link.
Well, it should be obvious that everything is covered up. In fact, somebody who worked there, air traffic control, and we have the article in, quoted in one of my newspaper, one of my newsletters, he actually got, I think, five or six of the air traffic controllers, and immediately after the attack, he had them all sit down and dictate onto an audio tape exactly what happened that day. And then he kept the tape for several weeks. He then decided, rather than keep the tape, he crushed it with his hand. He took out the tape, he cut it into little pieces about an inch long, and put them into a number of different waste paper baskets so they could never be pieced together. Now, why would anybody do something like that? Later he said, "Oh, shucks, it was just a mistake." But we have the article, where it tells about that.
I wonder
everything is cover-up. In incident, there are two books that cover this. One is Pretext for War by James Bovard, and the other is, of course, Michael Rubert's Crossing the Rubicon.
James Bamford.
Right.
There is a writer named Bovard, but this is James Bamford.
Right. I stand corrected. Thank you. James Bamford, Pretext for War.
But the paperback version of that has an excellent afterword that talks about what happened on the way up to the war in Iraq.
Yeah, right.
The Pretext for War. But that's a very good book.
Okay, fine. Well, look, is there anything else? We've got a couple of other people on
the
line.
No, sir. I just wanted to see what you thought of those two. I guess you haven't gotten to read the article yet.
You're speaking of which one now?
Alex had the link up for that Vanity Fair article. The man that is a producer for Oliver Stone's new movie.
Right.
I'm sorry, I thought you might have heard of this already. The man got a bunch of tapes from the military air traffic controllers for 9/11, and he wrote up an article in Vanity Fair. And, of course, Alex Jones has it. I think it's one of those lead stories on his website right now, this article.
Okay, fine. Well, that would be that's prisonplanet.com?
Yes, sir.
Okay, God bless. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, let's go to Jason calling from... Is this Jason? No. Hi, Jason. How are you doing?
It's a pleasure to talk with you, and... I love conspiracy. I love it so much to where I'm a painter and I go to work every day, and I get so depressed though inside, knowing that, as you were saying, everything's getting the government just suppresses information, lies to us, and conspiracies abound, and I think I've just lost my sense of being an American. I know you're a true patriot, I know, and I applaud you getting the information out. And it's like I just live my life for the next book I can read, the next article, the next newsletter, and to keep me abreast of, everything that's just gone on through, like you're talking about, the Masonic, connection, everything from Roswell. I mean, you name it, I just love conspiracy, but at the same time, I just have this inner depression. I was watching the Alex Jones website on just various things, and I just thought, it's all over. And as a Christian, I know that I just put my faith in the Lord, because there is a sinister being carrying this all out. But I just wanted to say, I know you got other callers, that I virtually hear you almost every night, and it's just the only thing that keeps me going.
Well, but the thing that really has to keep you going is not me. It's the realization that there's a spiritual battle, and this will draw you closer to the Lord, to realize that the scriptures really are true. In fact, I'm doing some research now, and we can perhaps talk about that some other evening, but as I read these things put out by the occultists, and I realize they realize what's in the Bible is absolutely true, too. They just have a different spin on it. And it makes me realize that the scriptures and what it says in the Holy Scriptures is really absolutely right. They know it. And these people have tapped into a supernatural intelligence, and there is a supernatural intelligence out there on the dark side. And God never intended us to get into that at all. In fact, the whole message of the Garden of Eden was, don't try to get into knowledge. Don't try to know too much. Don't eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Because, for 6,000 years, people have been trying to eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It has become the tree of death. What we want is the tree of life. And that is what God offers us. And it's there, but we have to put our faith in Him.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Doctor. And I tell you, you are just a living blessing on myself, and I know many others. And just continue to carry that torch. And I'll keep listening and keep, buying more books and keep reading my Bible, and just hope for the best, because look out, it's revelations. It's what is predicted and prophesied is going to come to light.
Well,
it's going to come to...
The thing is that we are to be the watchmen. We are the watchmen that is described in Ezekiel 3 and Ezekiel 33. And we are to tell the others, and if they don't want to hear, then their blood is on their hands. Our job is to tell them. And if God wants them to hear, they will.
God bless you, Doctor.
God bless you, too. Thanks so much. Okay, let's go to Regis, who's calling from, of all places, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hi, Regis. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I didn't hear what the last gentleman was talking about, because I was talking to your assistant for about 3 to 4 minutes on the telephone. But it possibly was similar to the question that I was going to ask of you. Over the years, I've listened to you via shortwave, and I've listened to your guest, talking about, end time prophecy, talking about the New World Order, and talking about, potential scenarios leading to that. And I also, you know, talked about you heard you guys talk about the, you know, the government, you know, the politicians, the hierarchy, people in power, whether, you know, they're the Rockefellers or whoever they are. And it seems that it's somewhat depressing, and possibly the gentleman before me might have said the same thing. But even Christians that are on your show, whenever they're talking about preparing for the end times and that, there's like a fine line between preparing and trusting in God. And I think sometimes people cross that line of being so concerned about their body and, you know, what they're going to eat and how they're going to survive, whatever, and, you know, to a point where they're not relying on God. It's more like a self-sufficient type of thing that I feel a lot of times is expressed by conservatives. Now, the question, specific question I wanted to ask you is, besides saying prayers, which I talked to your fellow worker about, you know, how important that is, what can a peon such as myself, you know, an average citizen, do besides call his congressman and senator, who really don't really care, or they'll lie until they get elected and do what they're going to do anyhow the next time? And with this electronic voting, we can't really rely on anything in the future when it comes to, you know, elections. But what can we do other than saying prayers and, again, being a watchman on the wall and try to talk to other people? Is there any other, you know, points, advice that you can give an individual, you know, to make things better? Or, you know,
the only thing that you can do for your own personal satisfaction, your own personal edification, is to draw closer to the Lord and to increase your faith. You know, because we're going to have faith in the difficult times that lie ahead. I have no question at all that we're entering the most difficult times in our nation's history. And even if it weren't for the things going on in the Middle East, simply the sinful nature of this country, you know, the things that are going on as far as gay marriage and teaching our kids starting in kindergarten that sodomy and the activities of homosexuality are perfectly all right, and the murder of almost 50 million unborn children, and the Christie skyrocketing incidence of sexually transmitted disease. And increasingly we're seeing, even here where I live, an increasing tempo of violence. In fact, the tempo of violence and lawlessness is increasing across America. Do you realize that we have over 2,200,000 people in prison here in the United States today? Mm-hmm. That's almost, not quite, but pretty close to almost 0.7%, almost 1% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
And we're beginning to see the whole of our structure of our society begin to implode. And the answer always is more government laws. You're going to have to keep your eyes fixed on the Lord. And then you're going to have to, you know, just really trust in Him. Certainly, I think you should make preparations. But in the final analysis, it's going to be your faith that's going to see you through. I think one reason why you want to make your preparations is so you can look after your family and, of course, others. And I think we'd be foolish not to, but you're absolutely right. In the final analysis, only God will see us through, because they can take us off and whisk us into a concentration camp.
Right.
But the thing is that right now, you just need to understand what's going on and learn how, in a quiet manner, to try to reach others and to try to get them to think. And if they don't want to hear you, don't press it. And I think we always have this tendency to want to convince others they've got to listen to us, that we have the answers. And all you do is raise the question, and God will make them hear.
Well, yeah, and I'm finding that out, too, over the last few years, because I talk to intelligent people that I know they can comprehend what I'm saying, and they're oblivious, you know, to the truth. And even the ones, this is what I was saying to your assistant, even the ones that seem interested, and they might even agree with me, I might even, give them concrete, you know, proof of what I'm saying, and I'll talk about history, and I'll give them examples, and they'll walk away as if they're going to investigate, and 2-3 weeks later, a month later, they haven't, you know, investigated, you know, to verify it at all. And the majority of the people that I've talked to in the last half a dozen years haven't really pursued any more truth than what I've given them.
But you never know when you're going to touch one person. Maybe that's all you're ever supposed to touch. I remember that wonderful story of the fellow who used to go around and trying to evangelize people, and he spent all of his life only got one convert, but that was Dwight Moody. Dr. Moody. So, you know, just keep doing it. Your job is not to make the people listen. God will make them realize the wisdom of what you say.
Through His Holy Spirit.
Amen to that.
Well, hey, I want to thank you for all the years I've listened to you, and I pray for your ministry.
Thank you so much.
God bless you, and keep up the work.
We will, and thank you for your prayers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. Let's go to Jonathan in Palm Springs. Hi, Jonathan. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you this evening?
I'm doing just fine.
Good. you know, the last caller kind of took a little bit of a wind out of my sails, but what I really called I've been listening to you and Alex Jones and various websites and whatnot for a long time, so I feel like I understand what's going on in this country, but I don't think I've ever heard you or anyone propose a program or a platform or give advice as to how to change the political situation on the ground, so to speak.
All right, fine. We will be back in just a moment. I'll try to answer that, okay? You hang right on there.
Yes, sir.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we've got Jonathan on from Palm Springs who wants to know how to change things. Jonathan, I tried working in the political parties. I have ran for Congress a couple of times. I was on the state central Republican committee, and I came to the realization that none of the major decisions are made through the structure of the political organizations. The decisions are made by wealthy and powerful people, and the politicians usually follow along. Now, once in a while on this issue, like on the issue of immigration and amnesty for illegal immigrants, there's been such an outcry that the politicians had to break ranks with the Bush administration and not go along with them. So we can have an effect, but it's got to be an issue that a lot of people feel very, very strongly about. And I think this is an excellent issue. And if nothing else, it helps us to educate people. But, you know, in the final analysis, you and I are not going to change things. God is going to change things. What we need, of course, is a revival in America. It's going to come. I don't know. I mean, some people tell us things are just going to keep getting worse and worse. But our job is to do our best. God did not require us to win. God required us to do our best. And this is what keeps me going and has kept me going now for 44 years.
Well, I can certainly appreciate that, and I certainly feel that way myself also. But so what you're saying is there's no such thing as fighting the power as far as getting results.
We are fighting supernatural power. I mean, and the only way to fight supernatural spiritual power is through the power of our Lord. He is the only one who can defeat the adversary, who now controls the people in key positions in both political parties. I'm firmly convinced of that. But God can intervene. Will He intervene? Only time's going to tell. What we don't have to be corrupted by what's going on. And believe me, it's an awful tendency to want to live this good life. Let me tell you that there's more excitement out there if you like pleasures of the flesh and you're watching. How many Christian ministers watch pornography? This is one of the big problems, a primary problem with Christian ministers. Many of them do, and many of them are Masons. And they would want to be better Christians, but they've never given their lives totally to Jesus, and this is what we have to do. We have to look to Him to direction. It's like somebody said about Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson believes in Jesus Christ, but he's never given his life to Jesus Christ, and that's why he's in so much trouble. With all the money he has, he's out drinking, and the only thing that's ever going to help him is a personal relationship with our Lord.
Well, that's encouraging words, and I thank you because that's sort of the conclusion that I'm having to reach myself. I believe that there certainly will be...
Hold that thought for just a moment, please. Well, Jonathan, go ahead. And want to finish up there?
Yeah, I'm just thinking that there absolutely will be... divine intervention, so to speak, in a extremely dramatic way. It's been foretold in many forums. So, I wait and watch.
That's our job, is to do our best while we're here. And we may have terrible suffering. God never promises we would not have that. But he will give us the strength to get through it.
Well, thank you very much, sir.
Good night. God bless you, gentlemen.
Good night.
Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan, and I enjoy the open lines. I hope you do, too. But let us know if you don't like them, why. Let us know, and we'll go ahead and go back to having a regular guest on Wednesday evening. Under any circumstances, this is the time when I have to remind all of our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and believe me, it's an expensive proposition to be on some 60 outlets, radio, internet, certainly radio stations all across America every week, and quite frankly, we need your help to continue what we're doing, to be up on Telstar 5-9 hours a day, along with Joyce and Pastor Butch Paul and Chuck Chrismeyer. And incidentally, if you don't get as well, why, you can always get an inexpensive Telstar dish and satellite, and then you can listen 24 hours a day. That's our own satellite uplink. But we do that because there are people across America who can't get shortwave or internet. And we don't charge you at all. We just hope that if you believe in what we're doing, you want to chip in and help and whatever you can. And then, of course, we hope many of you will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Certainly, I think it's an excellent overview of what's going on. The beauty of the book is it's very, very short. And then, of course, we put together three pamphlets, which we and they consist of articles I've written on the occult hierarchy. And then there's, I think, three or four letters that Dr. Cuddy wrote for us. And then, so that the three pamphlets together, they come as a set, Occult Hierarchy, Part 1, Part 2, Part 3, and will give you insight into things that you'll never read about elsewhere. And then, of course, we have our pamphlets on the history of money, on genetic engineering. We put together three pamphlets on Foreknowledge 911, the background of the attack on the World Trade Center, and of course the aftermath of that, the fact we have never tried to get Osama bin Laden. Then, of course, we have carry those great DVDs and videos by Joe Schimmel, Pastor Joe Schimmel. The New Age, let's see, I think they're, anyway, of course, I'm having a senior moment, I guess. It's Rock and Roll Sorcerers of the New Age. That's it. Rock and Roll Sorcerers of the New Age. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, 4-hour, 10-hour version. And then Joe has a great new DVD out. It's called The Da Vinci Con. And, of course, everybody's got a DVD or talk out on The Da Vinci Con, but nobody has done a good job as Joe Schimmel. He's going to be our guest, I believe, on tomorrow afternoon. And then 2 hours on... No, 2 hours actually on our evening programs. You'll hear him next Monday. You certainly want to hear Joe Schimmel talking about the Da Vinci Con and going into the film, the Da Vinci Code, and then the films on V for Vendetta and the film The Truman Show. And I honestly thought I understood The Truman Show until I watched the Da Vinci Con. And I will tell you that this is an outstanding DVD. It's actually almost 3 hours long, and you won't be able, of course, to get up at all. I mean, it is gripping. It really is. And then, of course, if you have not yet seen the DVD or video, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, of course, we certainly recommend that. Chuck Pitto's award-winning video. And then, of course, his other videos, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. And so they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get one of our newsletters, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. You go to our website of RadioLiberty.com, listen to our programs there. On the Internet, either 3 hours on Radio Liberty and 2 hours on the other uplinks we have or in shortwave, and then please pray for Radio Liberty. Thank you. this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need reminds of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please do not call in unless we ask for questions, because we have with us this evening Betty Freehoff, and Betty writes articles for News with Views. And I have here a couple of the articles she's written. One is the writing on the wall. The other is Our Lives, Our Fortune, and Our Sacred Honor. And I was just so impressed by the articles that she wrote. I asked her to come on and this evening, and we can talk about these articles or really whatever else you'd like to talk about. Betty, thank you so very much for being our guest tonight.
Well, thank you for asking me.
Well, what should we talk about? Would you like to talk about the writing on the wall? Do you think that's which one of the two would you like to talk about?
Oh, well, don't put me on the spot like that. Why don't you just ask the question?
All right, let's go up at the writing on the wall. And of course, you know, she starts out by saying, I grow tired of the same old rhetoric over and over. Again, coming from the right-wing parrot talk shows and television personalities, so I occasionally turn onto the left-wing commentators, where they espouse over and over again the exact opposite of the right-wingers. So who do we believe? So you pick up the story there.
Well, I say, is there some consensus somewhere? The reason I wrote this article was because I've been really getting into the Bible, and I had been reading Daniel. And about the writing on the wall and Nebuchadnezzar and his the message that he got in his dream, and nobody could interpret it, and Daniel came on the spot and interpreted, and he was saying basically to Nebuchadnezzar that your number is up. And so I sort of tied it in to America, because I feel sometimes like maybe we're in the last hour.
I really thought your analogy of Nebuchadnezzar, I mean, as you pointed out, God allowed Nebuchadnezzar to be in a position of power. And he had built this wonderful, wonderful city there, you know, and it had, the walls were 300 feet high. Why don't you tell a little bit about about that city? It was almost like it was indestructible.
Okay. My nose is running. Sorry. Let's see. I've got down here that the... like America, until 9/11, the city of Babylon thought it was safe from outside enemies because King, and I'm going to call him Nebi because he's got a long name there, whose reign was autocratic and absolute, had built what he believed to be an impregnable wall around Babylon. This wall was actually 15 miles square and was constructed of brick. It was 300 feet high and wide enough for four chariots to travel abreast around the city walls. He had supplies of grain and water to last for years. In fact, there was a canal channel of the Euphrates that went right through the city. Then I go on to say, well, the terrorists in America came over the top with airplanes, but in the case of Babylon, the enemy's army figured out a way to simply float in under the walls into the city.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Betty. And, okay. And what she's doing is drawing an analogy the ancient city there, to the United States of America. I mean, it seems that we're impenetrable. We're the mightiest military country in the whole world. I mean, we've got nuclear weapons and missiles and technology that's unbelievable. But, of course, America has forgotten God. And we'll be back in just a moment with Betty Prioff to talk about her story on the writing on the wall. Go ahead, Betty.
Am I back on?
You are back on the air.
Just about the time I blew my nose, I thought I was off. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Nobody will know.
And like Babylon, America used to believe it was impregnable with oceans on both sides. But who now owns our seaports? Who is now walking across our borders while our military is protecting the borders in other countries? and who is ignoring our Constitution, the Bill of Rights, to protect us as if they never existed. And I just go on to explain that I believe that we have been blessed as a nation for all these years, but probably, I think it sort of started back in 1850, the Civil War, how we began to lose our government and how it became more centralized. And from there on out, it's been gradual. It always is gradual, because if they went too fast with their New World Order crowd here, naturally the people would probably revolt, but so they do it very quietly. And so then I go on to say that, and what did we find later, the King Belshazzar, Nebi's son, doing as the enemies were floating into Babylon under his father's impregnable wall? He was throwing a feast, perhaps to build up the morale of those within, or perhaps in defiance of the enemy he thought was on the outside. The feast began like those in Washington, D.C., with cocktail parties often sponsored by lobbyists who pay for the best government money can buy. They eat, drink, and are merry while our enemies, both within and without, are planning their next strategic move. See, right now, in my personal opinion, I believe the Muslims are trying to spread us too thin with our military. I think our military is just about worn to a frazzle. They've been doing a lot of time over in Iraq, and then they come back for a little while, and they ship them right back out again. So this is one of the problems that I'm worried about here. I say they eat, drink, and are merry while our enemies, both within and without, are planning their next strategic move. While our elected officials are playing hopscotch or spin the bottle, our enemies are playing chess.
Well, you know, I think it's really very interesting. The Nebuchadnezzar's son was a fellow named Belshazzar. And, of course, they're having this great party there, because the enemy are advancing on the city, but they're really not worried. They got an impenetrable city. There's no way, of course, anybody could ever break into Babylon. And but then, of course, during this great party, this hand appears out of nowhere, and it writes something on the wall. It says, "Many, many, tinkle ye farsam." Many, many, and everybody looks at it, and what's that mean? And so they call in the seers and the other people to tell them what it means, and nobody can figure out what it is. And when we get back here, why, Betty's going to tell us the story that is immortalized in the Bible. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Betty Prioff, and she's written a wonderful article. If you'd like to read it, it's up on News with Views. And she actually has a section over there on the far left, and the writers are listed there. And then you can go to the writer, and then you can get a list of all the things they've written, and she's a regular writer. And this one's called The Writing on the Wall. And, you know, you usually don't sometimes think of the application of biblical stories. But, you know, Belshazzar was the son of Nebuchadnezzar. He's having a great party now, of course. They think that Babylon is totally safe. And as Betty was saying, the walls of Babylon are 300 feet high. They're wide enough so that, you know, you can race three or four chariots side by side on the top of those walls, and it's something like 15 miles square. A massive city, massive walls, massive fortification. The city is impenetrable. At least they think it's impenetrable, and so they're not even worried. They're having this great festivity. And one night, of course, this hand mysteriously appears and writes on the wall, "Many, many, tinkle ye farsam." And so the Belshazzar calls all the people to interpret it, and then they finally call Daniel, because nobody can really figure what it's about. And why don't you tell the story of what happened then, when they called Daniel to interpret what had been written on the wall, the handwriting on the wall, as it were?
Well, the bottom line was, he said to the king, "Your number's up. You're going to fall. God takes, he rises, he allows nations to rise and fall to teach them a lesson." And, of course, we know Nebi, as I recall, ended up in the field eating grain or grass with the animals for a number of years, didn't he?
That was before. This is actually after Nebuchadnezzar is dead, and this is his son.
Okay.
And so it's the son here, and the son, and basically Daniel says, "You're going to die before the night's over."
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened. Whether they dried up the canal, or whether they, you know, so that... diverted it so they could march in on dry ground or whether they floated in, doesn't really matter. The enemy came in, and that very night, in one night, the great city of Babylon fell. Now, that's a, you know, that's a rather shocking thing to happen. We live so comfortably here in America, almost like Babylon, impenetrable. We've got luxuries like the ancient Babylon had, but in one night, Babylon fell. And do you see an analogy to what's going on today, Betty?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I said this to my husband the other day. I was sort of irritated with the younger generation. They just don't know what it's like to go through a depression. They don't know what it's like to go through a war. There's no draft now. And they're all pretty materialistic. They're running around with these things called iPods, whatever they do, I don't know. And the computers, and it's driving me crazy, to be truthful with you. I just got on the computer with a few crash lessons last week because my son-in-law came up from California. It finally got me going. But I see the old computer as a 666. I believe God. I keep telling my dear friend that I think God doesn't let me on the thing. But it is so much easier to write these articles and things, and this is the only reason I stay on it. But there's really nothing on there that I'm interested in.
Well, of course, there's News with Views articles.
I
do like those, and of course, I like Joel Skousen's World Affairs Brief and things of that sort. Ready to keep abreast of what's going on. Of course, I do talk radio, so I got to have some working knowledge of what's going on in the world, because people always say, did you read that article? And it's awfully embarrassing to say, never heard of it.
Well, if I ever become a talk show host, I'll do it.
Okay. Well, anyway, then you, of course, go on and talk about the Bohemian Grove. And, you know, it's simply, if there was ever an example of depravity, it's the Bohemian Grove. In fact, you even talk about some remarks were made by Richard Nixon. And,
mm-hmm.
So why don't you tell a little bit about the Bohemian Grove? I mean, this is a place up in in Santa Rosa, not too far from where I live, where the elite of the world congregate for some very unusual activities. Go ahead and tell that story.
Well, I don't have it in my article, but I'll tell you a story that a friend of mine from down in your area told me. Her son, I believe he had a friend who worked for a limousine company, and he would transport these elite leaders from the San Francisco airport up to Santa Rosa, where they were having this Bohemian Grove event. And he told the other friend that the next president would be Reagan. And he heard it discussed in the back seat of his limousine before he took them to Bohemian Grove. And the next president was Ronald Reagan. So I'll just read what I've got here because I don't remember all of the details. But it is, it's on, oh my gosh, some river up in by Santa Rosa. And they fly into the Sonoma Airport at Santa Rosa or the San Francisco Airport. And then, like I say, they're driven to the Grove in limousines. They conduct New World Order business in a pagan atmosphere about which Deuteronomy 17:21 had warned. These bizarre Luciferian ceremonies have been taking place over 120 years, about the same time America's Republic began to gradually deteriorate. There's approximately 2,300 members, and I think the information I got, they pay in the vicinity of $10,000 a year in annual dues. Now, they pay this to go out there and camp. Can you imagine anybody going out in the woods and camping? Basically camping, because they are out in the woods. And the Lord warns us about meetings in the groves and so on and so forth. And I believe they take probably invited guests. And then in the article, I say that it's my personal opinion. Many innocent elected officials' first visit as guests, they become compromised and can become later blackmailed. I didn't go into a lot of detail. I thought maybe people could just go get on the Internet and dig out the information themselves. I have been told that they import little children for sexual purposes. I have been told there's a lot of homosexuality going on there. And therefore, if we have some elected officials that go there as invited guests and they get compromised in some way and they have their picture taken, how do you think they're going to vote after that?
And, of course, you actually quote here in your article from Richard Nixon. Do you recall what he said?
Yeah, and the reason, you're probably wondering how I even knew that from February 2000. I sit and listen with television, with my videos on all the time, practically, because I want to make sure I quote things properly. And then everything goes on a 3x5 card. And so this came up under my Bohemian Grove, so I thought I'd put it in. It says, in February 2000, I was listening to CNN, and President Nixon's picture was on the screen with a number of quotes that I assume were taken from some of his allegedly found audio tapes. He said the Bohemian Grove was the most faggy, I'm not going to say it on the air.
No, please don't. They charge me $5,000 if you do, but go ahead.
the most faggy G thing you can imagine. It's just, you know, you can imagine what the word was. We can just leave that word out, but he just says it's the most faggy thing you can imagine. So he must have been there, too.
Well, actually, he had gone. That was because he wanted to be the president, and he didn't. Richard Nixon's credit, and I don't give him credit for very much, but, you know, at least he had some sense of morality, and he felt it was immoral what was going on there. And he felt there was a tremendous amount of homosexual activity, but he had to associate with these men who were the leaders of the world. And, of course, that's the great tragedy. They did some interviews this last week with William H. Kennedy, who's written a book on satanic crimes, pointing out that there's, of course, there's been the public trials over in Europe involving people who are supplying children for the pedophiles in the Bilderberger group, and how a number of the men, these fabulously wealthy people in the Bilderbergers, are involved in pedophilia. Not a word in that in the media. So, and then, of course, Alex Jones' wonderful video, which we are carrying on the Bohemian Grove, we actually interviews a man named Gerson. That's not quite Gergen. Gergen, he was the a White House counsel. And showed the article that where Gergen had been quoted as saying he had resigned from the Bohemian Grove because he didn't like running around naked in the woods.
Yes, uh-huh.
Running around naked in the woods. Here are the leaders of our country, the presidents, the secretaries of state, the political and financial leaders of our country running around naked in the woods and faggy and pedophilia. And I've actually have a 4-tape set on the Bohemian Grove where we interview a woman who was sent there as a prostitute for the CIA. That's our 4-tape set. We invite people to get this and find out what we really have in the way of leaders today.
What was her name? I think I've got her information.
Her name is Kathy O'Brien.
Yeah, it's Kathy O'Brien. That's right. She worked with an FBI man or something.
No,
a policeman or something.
Well, a gentleman, Mark. Anyway, she's been with Mark Phillips for a number of years.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've got her book here or some information on her anyway. But see, there's also talk about human sacrifices. We're not going to say they're human sacrifices, but they claim that there's some sacrificing going on.
Well, it's a feigned human sacrifice, and if you really study it, it's like a sacrifice of God. Now you can do away with God. You can do whatever you want to. It's a feigned human sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of people, I think, that have got little muzzles on them after they work there, too. I believe they're probably pretty much sign a confidentiality statement or something, but some of them still talk, and there's quite a bit of... How far are you from Santa Rosa in San Francisco?
Well, I live in Santa Cruz, so we're probably about 100, 125 miles, something like that.
Okay. Well, this is what's going on, and we have, and I often think of Sodom and Gomorrah, and you read that and you think, how could it ever have been so depraved? And then all of a sudden you begin to see things like happening at the Bohemian Grove and the Bilderbergers. And so on and so forth, and you begin to think, oh my, we're there.
Well, I really fear that time is growing closer and closer. And most people, they don't see God's hand in any of this. Well, that was last fall. We were going to New Orleans for a meeting. And, you know, then, of course, it was going to be the gay parade there just a few days before the meeting. And, of course, then comes Hurricane Katrina about 2 days, and, oh, shucks, they had to cancel the gay parade. Sort of like they had to cancel the gay parade over in Jerusalem for this last week because they had a little war over there, and so they had to cancel it. But don't you worry, they're going to have about 100 hours of homosexual activity and celebrations in Jerusalem. I wonder how God feels about that. Well, Betty, certainly the things that you're pointing out really seem to be rushing headlong towards God's retribution, don't we?
Headlong towards Gomorrah, Sodom and Gomorrah, yes.
All right. Well, so you, of course, talked a lot about a lot of things. You talk about J. Vernon McGee, certainly one of our favorite commentators. And J. Vernon McGee is one of the few people I know who is almost immortal because he's been dead for a number of years, and yet you can hear him, you know, not only in the United States, but all throughout the world by the miracle of radio and pre-recorded tapings. Would you like to talk about your feelings about J. Vernon McGee?
Well, he died in 1988. I feel like I know him because I diligently turned the radio on every morning at 7 o'clock for 5 years, except a few times I wasn't near a radio, and I recorded them all. So I've got all of his messages, and I just I've got his five-volume commentaries that I think everybody should have because it helps us, helps me understand what is going on because he elaborates on things that I probably would read right over. He's really tough on the pastors. I'm in Jude right now, and he's talking about the apostasy, and he says we were there in 1988, of course, and it's I don't know when some of these were recorded, of course, but or his sermons were preached, but he claims the apostasy is bad. He said people, we have false teachers coming into the side doors of the churches, and they're taking us right into the Rick Warren stage, and I shouldn't even bring him up, but you've probably talked about him before, haven't you?
Yes, we have a number of times.
You haven't?
No, we have. We did a program just this afternoon on the this new movement where there are now 400,000 churches in the United States that are purpose-driven churches.
I know it. It's just terrible. Our church that we attend... we have two services. I attend a church that has primarily the older pastors there. But what disturbs me about the older pastors is we're using the NIV Bible. And I've written a few notes to our pastor, and he just ignores me. We left another church because of things like that, and I walked into this new church, and there was the NIV again. But it seems like we can't get away from it. It's all around. The only difference in this church is they've got an older congregation in the 11 o'clock service, so we don't get the drums. But the first service, they're out there beating the drums, and I don't know what's, you know, it's just very disturbing to me, very disturbing. And then I got the information, I don't know if you, do you happen to know Myers from the Last Trumpet newsletter?
David Myers, right.
Yeah, he just wrote in his August newsletter, if you've had a chance to read it, and I might recommend that your people, your listeners, go to his website. It's Last Trumpet Ministries, lasttrumpetministry.org. And he wrote in his August newsletter that Rick Warren has been popular with the North Korean Communist government. The multimillionaire Warren has recently been invited to North Korea to speak to 15,000 people. And then he goes on to say that Ingrid Schluter of BCY of American Radio Network said it very well regarding this Rick Warren event with the following words. Warren won't call the communist faithful to repent and believe on the Lord Jesus Christ because he preaches a man-centered counterfeit gospel. Not for a moment do these leaders worry that they will have a Christian revival on their hands by letting Mr. Warren speak. Rick Warren is loved and feted because his message is absent the cross and Christ's call to die.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have with us Betty Freehoff, and we're talking about an article that she'd written. That you can find it up on News Reviews called The Writing on the Wall. It's really a fascinating story because it starts out talking about Babylon. And, you know, Babylon it was so strong and so powerful and so well fortified that nothing could possibly disturb it or... And they, even though the army was advancing, the enemy army was advancing, I believe it was the Persian army, why, they weren't worried about it. And then of course, in one night, Babylon fell. And so then, of course, going into what's going on in our society today and the depravity we see manifested in the Bohemian Grove, where all of our presidents go, Republicans and Democrat presidents, and they have homosexuality and people running around naked and... What sort of human beings would go to something like that? And you pick up the story, Betty.
Well, you know, there's no saying that they're in bed together or politics, they're all in bed together or something like that. I think that happens at the Bohemian Grove. But you asked me about McGee, and he says that a nation will fall, number one, with spiritual apostasy. And Jude hits that pretty heavy, like I just said a little while ago. Moral degradation. We can go to the Bohemian Grove and the homosexual movement and abortions and all that. And then political anarchy. And I really feel like political anarchy is going to take place in this election, and if not this one, in 2 years when we go for a president again. And God help us if Hillary Clinton runs.
Well, I think that Hillary is probably going to run, and I'm not sure God is going to help us. I think that...
Do you think he might let her in?
Well, I think
the
that...
Jezebel?
I think that unless people repent in this country, there's going to be terrible consequences. There's going to be terrible retribution. Because men and women become accomplices of the evil that they fail to oppose. And most of the good Christians, most of the good people in this country, don't want to oppose anything because they don't want to be considered intolerant.
Well, it's not only intolerant, but they have managed to put all these laws on the book called hate crimes. And now we're going into the thought police. I talked to a cousin on the phone a few days back, and she said something on the phone, and I said, oh, honey, don't say that. You don't know who's listening. You just don't know who's listening anymore. And you can be put into jail for what you're thinking. And, of course, we can probably go into Mel Gibson and what's going on with him now.
Well, I feel very sorry for Mel. I think he's basically a very decent human being. But, of course, I don't think he has a personal relationship with our Lord.
I don't think he does either.
I think that he knows about Jesus Christ. I think that he believes in Jesus Christ. But Jesus Christ is not directing his life.
Yeah. Well, that, I think, is the case with... Well, he's Catholic, isn't he?
He's Catholic, right.
Yeah. I didn't even go see his movie. I didn't have to go.
It was really, I thought it was an excellent movie. I think it had a profound impact on many people's lives. And I think that his heart is in the right place. But if you don't surrender your life to Jesus Christ, nothing's going to change. And you're going to have all the frustrations. He doesn't have to worry about money.
Yeah, I know.
He doesn't have to worry about anything. I mean, he's popular, you know. And then to get himself to be out there with carousing with a couple of young girls and getting himself drunk and then making some, you know, racial slurs. And you can apologize all you want to. And I certainly respect him as a human being, but I feel sorry for him because until he turns his life over to Jesus, nothing's going to get any better. He can go into all the rehab he wants to. That's not going to solve the longing that each one of us has for a personal relationship with our Lord.
Have you noticed everybody goes into rehab right away? Like that's a cure?
Well, that of course, is to say, well, now I'm going to be all right because I've been to rehab. And
yes.
The trouble is rehab doesn't help people at all. I mean, if you look at the recurrence rate after you've been in rehab, it's about 90%.
Mm-hmm. We have a group here in town that I support, and they try to get the alcoholics into jobs and off of liquor. And I don't know if they're faith-based or not. But I know they reported the other day they're having a very good percentage of them are coming out of getting away from the alcoholism. The problem with all of this, Dr. Stan, is they refuse to call it the three-letter word.
You mean sin?
They've all got a disease.
Right.
They've all got a disease, and some pharmaceutical will come along and give them a pill.
Well, of course, sin has been a factor in man's life since going back about 6,000 years. There in a garden someplace many years ago, and of course, Adam and Eve sinned, and man is a sinner until we recognize man as a sinner, and that's why he needs a Savior. Unless we preach that from the pulpit, why people are not going to be aware of it. And I think the ministers are going into this, wishy-washy type of religion that never wants to talk about sin or prophecy or anything that makes people feel uneasy or certainly not judgment or hell. It certainly is doing a tremendous amount of harm. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Betty Friedhoff, and, of course, we're talking about her article on the handwriting on the wall. And, of course, really the message I think you're trying to get out, Betty, is that America could fall just as Babylon fell. Would that be a fair estimation of what your message is?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I believe it's coming just as sure as I'm sitting here. I don't. Either it's coming or we don't have a God that tells us the truth. That's the way I look at it. And I think he's been very patient, very merciful for far too many years. There was a friend sent me something today. You were talking about the pastors. A friend sent me something today, and I don't have it in front of me, so I'm going to try to pull them out of my brain. It was about three little boys. One little boy said, "My dad picks up a pen, and he writes a poem, and he gets paid $50. Another little boy said, "My dad picks up a pen, and he writes an article. He gets paid $100. Another little boy said, "My dad gives a sermon on Sunday morning, and he's got so much money it takes eight ushers to haul it out." And I think that's about where we are right now. The pastors do not want to lose congregation by preaching hell and damnation and fire sermons anymore. They used to. At the turn of the century, everybody was in the Authorized King James Bible. We had a sermon down here at our church one Sunday morning, and it was out of, I think it was out of, let me think, I got it written down here. Probably about Matthew 9:13 or maybe Mark 2:17. And we read it. He read it out of an NIV. And I had my Authorized King James with me. And when they got done reading it, I said to the lady next to me after church, I said, "Did you notice that when he read, they left off the word to repentance?" Now that's Matthew 9:13, Mark 2:17, if other listeners want to check their Bibles on that. And she said, "Why, no, I didn't notice that." And then she said to me, "But it's all the school's fault." And I said, "Why do you blame it on the schools?" And she says, "They took the Bibles out of the schools." And I said, "Yeah, but this Bible is in our church." And she turned and started talking to somebody else. She just didn't want to have a conversation about it. It's driving me crazy, Dr. Stan. I have trouble going to church. I don't go to Sunday school because I know I'll be argumentative. And then I'll be, you know, labeled a troublemaker. And it's very frustrating.
Well,
very frustrating.
Betty, we are called to do the best we can. And obviously you're not going to change this church. And trouble is that so many people are having trouble finding a church where they really preach the gospel. And I hear this all the time from people all across the country. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Betty Friedhoff, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And if you have a question for Betty, or want a comment on what we've been talking about, and the fact that God does judge nations, and certainly nations cannot be held to judgment in an afterlife, so they're held to judgment in this life. And just as Babylon has fallen, and all great empires have fallen, and of course Rome fell in one day, and certainly, you know, great wars between nations have ended in one simple day. Certainly Alexander the Great defeated Darius, the mightiest emperor in the world, the Persian emperor, in one day. And of course, Alexander the Great only had an army of about 35,000 Macedonians, and Darius had hundreds of thousands of well-trained soldiers and brigades of elephants and all that sort of thing. But it all ended in one day. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Betty, do you have a web page or anything you'd like to get out?
No. I have a dear friend that has offered to build me a web page, but I haven't yet. I guess I should. I should have a blog or something.
You surely should, and because your articles are well worthwhile. And then, of course, you can even take your radio interviews and put them up there as well.
How do you get the air radio interviews?
Well, of course, you do. You would call me and ask for me a copy of the radio interviews, and of course, we would then, you know, as a courtesy, send you a copy of the radio interview, and you can post it on your website.
Oh, I see. See, I'm just learning the computer. I've really been slow on it. I had a web TV, that, you know, a little box sits on top of my TV, and I had that for about 7 years, and it finally gave up the ghost last October. And you know what? I hesitated for 6 long months before I even got back on. I just couldn't do it. But I'm getting more comfortable with it now since my son-in-law has come up here. And I think one of my biggest problems has been on the mouse. I've got an itchy finger, and it doesn't, it shakes, and that computer doesn't accept an itchy finger. So we learned a few tricks to work around these things, and I think I'm learning it now. Yeah, I might move on eventually. This man says he'll handle the whole thing, but I don't know. I've hesitated. I don't do things real quickly, Dr. Stan. In fact, even radio interviews, I avoid them. I really do. I had a lady call me from Colorado about 3 Mondays ago, and Valentine, I think, was her name, and she called. Am I making some noise here? And she called and asked me if I'd do her radio program. My battery's running down. Just a minute, I got to change phones.
All right, fine. Well, our guest is...
Are you there?
We certainly are. Go right ahead.
Pardon?
Go right ahead.
Okay, let me turn this thing off. I thought it would hang in there, because that's a better phone, and I'm having a little trouble hearing. So can you turn your volume up a little bit there?
All right, fine. We can go just a little bit more.
Yeah, I would appreciate that.
Okay, go ahead.
So anyway, I forget what her name was. Valentine, I think, was her last name, and she called and asked me if I'd do her radio show. Oh, I had more excuses. I used Moses and everybody else. I wanted to send Aaron. But I finally decided that if God wants me to do it, I will do it. But I'm the type of person that would sooner stay in the kitchen and wash the dishes, Dr. Stan.
I know, but we need people who have talent, who can express themselves well, to make this information available. Of course, you make it through newswithviews.com, and people can get your articles there. But you get a web page up there, get the information out. We're involved in a battle of ideas. Admittedly, it's a spiritual battle, but we have to present our ideas, and we have to present our ideas from a Christian point of view if we hope to be effective at all and to touch people's lives. Well, let's go to Jerry, who's calling from Sun Valley, California. And incidentally, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Jerry, did you have a question or comment?
Yes. Most of my Christian friends are very adamant that we should support Israel at all costs. And I heard some of what you said. And I wondered, you know, the state of Israel as it is, it was the first, I think, major move of the United Nations in the 1940s. And have you heard of Lynn Horowitz?
Yes, I have.
Well, I attended a lecture of his at the Granada Forum, and he said one reason that came about is because some of who wanted the state of Israel had the Rockefeller about his short and curlies, and they said, if you don't push this thing through, we're going to blow the whistle on you. So Rockefeller went ahead with great guns and got this thing pushed through by the United Nations. And then I had heard that in the 20s there were marches in Britain saying that they wanted a state of Israel, but they wanted one founded by God, not by men, as a political thing, and they were against it. So I was wondering, I don't know how to judge the situation.
All right, well, let's see what Betty's thoughts are, and then I'll tell you what I think. Betty, how would you respond to Jerry? He's wondering now, should we be backing Israel in this war, and should we be backing Israel's place in the land? And some Jews wanted God to establish this rather than men. So how do you feel about it?
Well, I can quote Dr. J. Vernon McGee. He says there's more Jews in New York than there are in Israel. How do I feel about the Middle East right now? Mixed emotions. It's confusing to me. I have a little trouble really understanding it, but I do know this. When God moves, he will protect Israel on his timetable. And I'm not so sure. I don't think he needs America to help with Israel. But I hate to see all these battles, but it's a sign of the times. Wars and rumors of wars, and it's going crazy. I keep waiting for the clouds to part. I just don't think we're going to be here too much longer. I'm not so surprised. I'm not so sure right now that we haven't maybe started a little bit into the, tribulation period.
Well, at least we're moving towards World War III.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Jerry, let me just tell you what I think. First of all, I believe that that God does rule in the affairs of men, but I also believe that Satan's out there, and Satan has a plan. And Satan would love to get all the Jews into Israel so he can kill them all. Because if he can kill all the Jews, he's going to thwart God's plan. And so the Satanists have been working for years to bring about the state of Israel. But God has always intended that the state of Israel would be reconstituted, because this is prophetic, that they will return to the Holy Land. So on one hand, you have the Satanists working, and of course they're working to create the state of Israel, and of course now, of course, they reduce the size. It's going to be very easy to kill off all the Jews that are there, because they've only got this little country now, a very, very tiny country. And I believe that this is why they're pulling them in from Gaza, and they're pulling them in, from the West Bank. And on the other hand, I believe God is going to intervene and protect them from being killed, although I do believe that there's going to be an awful lot of Jews that are going to die, and whether it'll be now or whether it'll be later down the line. But God will always maintain a remnant of Jews, because they play an important part in his ultimate plan. I think right now you're seeing a situation that is totally manipulated. It's manipulated by the United States. It's manipulated by Iran, which is subservient to China, and Russia, which is subservient to the United States. I think that things are going to get a lot worse over there. I think the tragedy is a lot of Christians are being killed in Lebanon. About half the population are Christians, and we never talk about that. And so which side am I backing? I'm not backing either side. I think all we can do is watch it and realize that, we're moving, I think, into very, very difficult times for both Lebanon and Israel. And I think we should support and pray for both of them.
It's interesting you should say that, because I didn't think about it when you asked me the question, but as you were talking about them coming back to Israel, I had the same, I guess you could call it vision, or at least an observation. I was watching TV one night, and the planes were pulling in, and a lady got off, and she said, "I've come back to Israel to help them." And it went through my mind, I never thought, like you're saying, all of them are going to go back. But that went through my mind that there's going to be a lot more returning to Israel.
Amen. And they will want to be there to help. I mean, there are a lot of Jews throughout the world who really do believe in Israel. They don't understand the geopolitical considerations. They don't understand the spiritual implications. Many of them don't even really believe in God. They just believe in being Jews. But one day God will at least convert many of them. I will tell you one of the most exciting things, Jerry, the number of Messianic Jews I've run into. I mean, you'd be amazed at how many Jews today are converting to Christianity here in the United States. There's a tremendous Messianic movement here.
We have it right here and where I live, too.
So anything else, Jerry?
No, I was wondering if this may be Albert Pike's plan, trying to thwart prophecy as well.
I think that you're absolutely right. I think Chris Pike is he's gone to his just rewards long ago, but Pike, of course, is one of the fathers of modern-day Satanism.
All right. Thanks, Dr. Sand.
God bless you. Well, let's go to Marilyn, who's calling from the Bay Area. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, Marilyn. How are you doing?
Fine, Dr. Stan. I was going to ask one thing, and then when you started talking about Israel, I think I'll shift gears. I have been home tonight, and I just called the last show that was on RBN, which was a person that doesn't believe that Israel, as presently constituted, those are real Jews. And so I had a little tiff with him. Not a tiff. I just said, well, I don't believe that. And but I think it's interesting. Do you think that the United States is just using Israel at this point? And, Israel is doing kind of like they did in the Old Testament, where they ran to whoever they could to get help to stay alive, and that's going to backfire on them?
Well, let's get Betty's response, and then I will give you my response. But first of all, let's see what Betty's response is. Betty?
I'm having just a little trouble hearing those callers.
Okay, the question is, is Israel simply doing the United States bidding? In other words, is Israel really calling the shots here, or is the United States calling the shots and Israel's doing the United States bidding? What do you think about that?
The latter.
All right.
I think Israel's doing our job right now, because we are stretched to the limit with our military. We don't even have enough National Guard to put down on the Mexican border. I believe didn't Bush call for like 2,600?
No, it was 6,000. He wanted 6,000.
6,000, is that what it was? And I think he's only got less than 1,000 right now.
Right.
He just doesn't have them. And so consequently, yes, I think they're letting Israel fight the war right now. We're stretched to the limit. What are they going to do in Iraq? We can't get out of there.
I know.
Everyone we accidentally kill over there, they're going to come back and kill one of us. It's a mess.
And it's going to get a lot worse in Maryland. I think that Betty is absolutely right. You're seeing a war of proxies. Israel is fighting Hezbollah, but in truth, the United States is fighting Iran and Syria. That was always the plan. And this whole situation, as far as the attack on Israel's attack on Hezbollah, because they kidnapped two soldiers who, in fact, my friend Barry Samish, who's a Jewish patriot, feels that this was a setup. They put those people, there in an indefensible position, knowing they would be captured so they could justify going to war. And he says that this has really been planned for a year. They were looking for an excuse. Now they had one, but they are carrying out the directives of Washington, D.C. And you can know that because Washington, D.C. is not doing what they would ordinarily do, and that is demand a ceasefire. I mean, the logical thing to do would be to demand a ceasefire on both sides and get some sort of an international peacekeeping force in there that with teeth in it that would, disarm Hezbollah and keep them from firing rockets on into Israel and insist on Israel and not bombing Lebanon. And we're not doing any of that. We're not doing anything that's logical. And when you see something that's illogical, then there's got to be a logical explanation. And the explanation is this is simply a forerunner to an expansion of the war in the Middle East, which is exactly what our leaders want, but it is exactly what the Iranian leaders want as well, which just doesn't make sense unless there is some sort of a cosmic plan that's being played out. And this is what I believe.
Don't you believe that Israel is also being used as a pretext to set up a peacekeeping? It's already, to me, it looks like they're already going to do this. They're going to let them go for a while, and then they're going to set up this buffer zone with these so-called peacekeepers, which are nothing more than mercenaries there in southern Lebanon. It looks to me like that's what this is all about. They want to get those guys in there to get control of that area for some reason.
All right. What are your thoughts on that, Betty? Did you hear the question? Marilyn says that she thinks that this is all about, bringing in peacekeepers into southern Lebanon. That it's all about, they want to bring the peacekeepers in. How do you feel about that?
But do we trust the peacekeepers? We've had them in other countries, and look what they do. They rape, they rob, they're terrible.
Well,
the United Nations.
It depends on where they came from. If we had them from Scandinavia, hopefully that would be a little bit better behaved than if they came from Zimbabwe.
Have you had Constance? You know Constance Cummings,
yes.
I'm sure. Have you had her on lately?
Yes, we had her on about 10 days ago.
Yeah, well, I bet she was talking about Javier Solano, wasn't she?
Right.
Yeah, the head of NATO. Now, this guy was a Marxist. And before he became head of NATO, he was adamantly against it. And now all of a sudden here he is head of NATO. So I keep watching for his name to appear that he's going to bring in some peace people.
Well,
that's what I'm thinking about. I keep watching for his name.
I think that's a very wise person. And for our listeners out there, the name is Avier, Javier Solano. And he is one of the major players in this whole situation. Marilyn, I hope and pray that you're right. I hope that they're going to bring peacekeepers in and they're going to put a stop to the senseless slaughter over there. But I fear that they really want a much larger war. If they wanted to stop the war, they will bring in the peacekeepers. If they do not want to stop the war, they will not. And then, of course, why we don't know how far this is going to go. So we're just going to have to wait and watch and see. But when you hear the president say we're going to have a ceasefire now, then immediately everybody will agree. But if he doesn't say that, it means that they want to expand the war, a direct confrontation with Iran.
Well, it seems like they are going to stop it eventually. They're just going to let them mop up a little bit. But isn't Hezbollah – now, one thing I've noticed is Hezbollah has changed its spelling. It used to be Hezbollah, Now it's Hezbollah. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it used to be with an E and now it's with an I, but it's really the Army of God.
Well, why are they changing it in midstream? That's pretty odd, right?
Well, why do they change Beijing to Peking, or they just like to, they change this, the pronunciation of Mao Zedong. You know, they do that all the time just to keep us off balance. That's my impression.
Is the United States funding Hezbollah, though? Aren't they indirectly funding Hezbollah or whoever in the heck they are?
Well, supposedly they're getting their funding from Iran, but we don't know where the money's coming from. We do know that Iran is dependent upon China and Russia for arms and technology. And, of course, we are providing technology and arms to, or at least the ability to produce them to both China and Russia. So,
yeah.
So basically, you know, we're against Iran. Iran is dependent on China. China is dependent on us. And you go around the circle, it gets so confusing that people say it doesn't make any sense. And that's exactly right. It doesn't make sense unless you understand it's all a scam. And we're creating the best enemies money could buy. Because somebody wants World War III, in my estimation.
Yep. That's the whole thing. Thanks, Dan.
God bless. Bye-bye.
See, we're tied up in Iraq now. But
hold that thought. We'll be right back, Betty.
Okay.
Go ahead, Betty.
I was just going to say, we're tied up in Iraq right now, and I think maybe it's sort of a diversionary tactic to a certain degree, too, to take the pressure off of us. It's now on Israel. And I just had a book here that I'm reading. It's called Armed Madhouse by Greg Palast, and he says
a great blast. Oh yeah, he's quite a guy.
Yeah, he is, and I've just gotten into it. But have you read the book by any chance?
No, I haven't, but I've interviewed him in the past, and he's a very very astute author. He's very far to the left, but he's so far to the left he's almost where I am. So go ahead and tell us about it.
Well, he said I just read today. He said that they had two plans before we ever. It's just right after Bush was elected. They had two plans, and he said he has them. And he said the first plan was in and out in 3 days, and that didn't work. And so then he said the second plan was a corporate takeover. They're going in there and making a mess so that our corporations can go over there and make a lot of money. And I hear the left-wing talk show hosts, and that's exactly what they're saying. And, of course, I, you know, roll my eyes and think, can that be true? Would they deliberately set it up? But then you go on to read a little bit more, and you see all the interlocks. There's on this board, there's one group on this board of directors, and they're on another board of directors, and they cross over. And it's all about the money, I think. We have to follow the money.
Well, I think, of course, you have to understand that Greg Palast is a brilliant individual and a brilliant writer and commentator, but he doesn't understand the spiritualist. So many
saw that in his book, yes.
And, of course, until you understand that there really are spiritual forces that energize all these wicked and wealthy
mm-hmm.
people, a lot of this still doesn't make sense. Because, you know, these people have the wealth of the world. Now, admittedly, they're wicked and evil people. And Maurice Strong, a multi-billionaire,
yeah.
risked everything to take a paltry $1 million from Saddam Hussein and had to leave his post in the United Nations. Why would a multi-billionaire like Maurice Strong risk his prestige and his position, you know, in the United Nations for $1 million? Just because he's a corrupt individual. Yeah. I mean, unless we understand the spiritual component, I think we get lost in all the corporate boards. Yes, they're real. There are direct relationships, but there's far more to this than meets the eye.
Well, if I don't sleep well at night, it's not because I'm fearful of what's going to happen. Where I live, I don't worry about any Muslim coming in and blowing us up or anything like that. Now, I might have a little trouble if I lived in a high rise in New York City or Portland, Oregon, or something like that, but I think a lot of it is fear. A lot of this is fear to get a lot of this stuff passed. I'm sure you've had guests on there that have talked about the Patriot Act.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back, Betty. Well, I guess it's been Betty Prioff. We've had a fascinating hour. Betty, I really appreciate so much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I hope we can get you on again sometime. And you just keep writing those great articles, and I'll keep reading them.
Okay, thank you.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Betty Prioff, really a delightful hour and a very delightful person. She's got another couple of articles up there, and I commend them to you. In fact, we get a number of our guests off of News with Views just simply because they have such excellent writers there. So I commend it. They have about 1 million hits a day there at that one website. And it's put up by one man who's actually a refugee from the Eastern Europe. His name is Paul Walters. You never know what to talk to him, but he doesn't have an accent, but he loves America. And he feels so strongly about what we have here and the freedom that he sees being lost, that he committed himself to getting that website up there, and he works, you know, probably 16, 18 hours a day to keep it going. It's amazing sometimes people who've lived without freedom value freedom a lot more than those of us who've already had it. Well, we do hope, of course, and many of you out there in the listening audience will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's primarily how we're able to do what we do. Oh, we do sell the Berkey products, and if you want to get the fluoride out of your water, or you want to be sure you have a source of potable water if things get bad, why, you'll certainly want to give us a call and get the information or catalog of the Berkey products, or get them, and certainly you don't want to be drinking fluoridated water, and you want to have something that you can depend on to, of course, give you water if things do get bad, and things are moving at a frightening clip, and we keep pointing out that you've got to make your preparations. Now, somebody called and said, well, should we be making preparations and should we be trusting in the Lord? And my response is, yes. You want to do both. Not that you certainly want to put more effort into your preparations than trusting in the Lord, because that may be all any of us will have down the line. But at least for the time being, I think we should do both. And so we hope that many of you will be wanting to lay in a supply of medicines. And I'm talking about vitamins and minerals and selenium and something called Alibiotic, which is a natural a product that's got all the things that fight infections. We actually have used this here, and I've been quite impressed by it. It's got elderberry and garlic and oil of oregano and two or three other things that you need to fight infections, and all in one nice little capsule. And so, but you need a supply of vitamin C and D and fish oils and selenium and magnesium, and you want to have a supply on hand. That's one reason why we started to carry these, so we ourselves would have a supply on hand for ourselves and our neighbors. So if you'd like to know more about the health products we carry, the Berkey products, the Miracle 2 products we carry, or, of course, the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, or the Sanjian Radio we carry, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to go to our website at radioliberty.com. You can get my book there. You can get all sorts of four tape sets on the Bohemian Grove, on Skull and Bones. You can get our books on the Skull and Bones and material we have that really unavailable every place. We actually have the membership list from Skull and Bones from Skull and Bones. And you'll find all the Bush family there and all the other people from the wealthy families belonging to this occult organization that has, you know, actually, of course, there some of their ceremonies. They put on their black robes and their hoods and they carry their candles, just like they do at the Bohemian Grove, but they do at all occult ceremonies. And fascinating material, you know, and there actually at least is one woman who actually witnessed one of these ceremonies and was threatened that they would kill her if she ever told anybody else. Well, she did tell Alexandra Robbins, and you'll hear my interviews with Alexandra about these secret ceremonies of Skull and Bones, and we have an interview with Alexandra Robbins. We carry her book. We think it's important that you understand what's going on and that you're able to communicate this with others. So, of course, we ask you, go to our website at radioliberty.com, call us at 1-800-544-8927, and then please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow evening when we'll be back again, may the Lord be with you. Thank you.